And it is time once again for another AEW Dynamite review here on the Mr. Warren Hayes Show. Hello, I'm Mr. Warren Hayes. Welcome. Hi, nice to see you. Come on in, have a seat. Let's grab a sparkling beverage and cozy on up next to each other and stare at each other longingly in each other's eyes as I, you know, talk about last night's edition of Dynamite for about 60 minutes or so. How about that? There's your perfect first date right there. Am I right? We're going to be talking about the April 17, 2024 edition of AEW Dynamite. But before we get into it officially, I just want to remind you that likes and subscriptions on youtube.com/Mr. Warren Hayes help out a great deal. So do 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts and 5-star ratings on Spotify. All little things that you can do to help grow the podcast tremendously. I would appreciate any type of support you can give on that end, and it's easy to do, and it's very meaningful, and we wouldn't be mentioning it so much. When I say we, I mean me, but also others in the same situation as I am. We wouldn't be mentioning it as much if it didn't have an impact. But it really does impact the growth of our channels, our presence on podcast application. So yeah, if you can find the time to do that, that would be tremendous. Just like I'm, you know, I found the time here to do the Dynamite review. I always find time on Thursdays. It's not even special war. And, you know, it's not even like, oh, I was able to make it. You know, that's what you do on Thursdays, brother. What are you talking about? It's April 18. I'm recording this on a Thursday. I've been up very early. My dog had tummy issues this morning. I've been up since 5 a.m. This morning, which is very unusual for me. So it's going to be a hell of a day. And hopefully it doesn't impact negatively the review. You know, if it impacts it positively, well, you know, we'll all be winners, but April 18 is basically, just, I always like to mention it, that this, I record this on the next morning on Thursday after sleeping on the Dynamite itself. But this is where we're at. It's the Dynamite that took place in Indianapolis, Indiana, at the Indiana Farmers Coliseum. 2,495 tickets distributed for the show, according to WrestleTix. Not necessarily good. We're down from the previous visit, AEW visit to this same arena in 2023, in September 6th, actually, 2023, where the Dynamite there had 3,006 tickets distributed. Not necessarily great. It wasn't great back then. It's not necessarily better now. The attendance for AEW shows still continue to not be fantastic. Yeah. You know, Tony Khan keeps telling us about the TV deal and how good it's going to be and how excited he is for it, and using all of that usual jargon, but you know, it turns out that we'd like, you know, it, hopefully it will be a good sum of cash, because right now, AEW domestically, going around town, essentially, it's not been great. It has not been fantastic. So, listen, we'll see how things continue to develop, but you know, the trend continues to be what it is. We did get some good spikes recently for some shows, but you know, now we're back into the typical trend that we've been seeing for months at this point, as far as attendance goes. Of course, we're always talking about attendance here. The reversal of fortune will happen once the product starts becoming hot again, like really, really hot. Quite frankly, I feel like since WWE started getting really hot again, I think it did impact ticket sales. I think it impacted people paying money to go see AEW or perceiving AEW as a viable alternative to WWE. Since, you know, if WWE has a very hot product and has been doing fantastic business, and people consider their creative, their matches to be, you know, very good, and they're ready to shell out money, and Vince is gone and they're the babyface again. Well, you know, these are a lot of competitive advantages that AEW had that maybe no longer have the same type of value moving forward, at least for now. You know, hot periods don't last forever. You know, we'll see just how long WWE can sustain this. There, you know, we've talked about it on the main Mr. Warren Hayes Show podcast, which you should check out. You know, of course, it's always a good time. But we've talked about this, you know, now that Roman is gone for a while, now that The Rock is gone for a while, now that, you know, these big players that played tremendous parts in the buildup to WrestleMania have stepped away. And, the bloodline angle is what it is at this point, especially now with Roman gone. How is WWE going to be able to continue, right? What is their strategy going to be moving forward? Can Cody carry the whole shebang? We're about to find out. We're about to see how this goes. But I feel there's got to be some kind of correlation somewhere. There's got to be some kind of there's got to be some kind of A to Z type of causality here, where WWE's success is impeding on AEW's live gates. I think it's on multiple levels. I think it has to. It only makes sense. But let's get to the show. As we mentioned, did we mention? I don't even remember if I mentioned it, that this is the Dynasty Go Home show. I don't think we talked about it at all. But this is the Dynasty. I don't think I've prefaced this in any way, shape, or form saying that this was the right? See, this is what getting up at 5 a.m. does to me. Just, you know, it further scrambles my already scrambled brain. You know, not necessarily a good sign here. But this was the Dynasty Go Home show. And overall, I think I'm going to speak positively of the show. And I say think because, you know, I have my notes down and whatnot, you know, and I have my notes from last night and I have my notes, my talking points and whatnot. And, you know, sometimes this is the weird thing doing these reviews that I found that, you know, and I'm not alone in feeling what I'm going to express here. Sometimes you sit down and you get ready to do your review. You know, you set up the microphone, you test your audio levels. You know, you get a drink and, you know, you're settled in. You put on your favorite hat. You know, your Violence Forever T-shirt, and you get ready to go. And you're like, okay, well, I've got some good things to say about this week's show, and I'm gonna get into it, and it's gonna be good. And then as you're doing it, you realize, as you're talking about it, you're like, you know what? Maybe you didn't like it as much as you thought. It's strange, right? Where you sit down and you say to yourself, this is going to be a positive review overall. We're going to talk about a lot of good things. I like the show. And then you're doing it. And then you're like, man, as you're breaking it down, like you're going deeper into your thoughts, into your plan, into your analysis. And you're like, turns out I didn't like the show as much as I did. Now, I'm not saying that this is what's going to happen here. It's just sometimes this stuff happens, and which is why it may sound weird when I say, I think I like the show. I think it was a good show. Let's get into it and let's find out. I feel like we're all going to find out together this week if I how much I like the show or not. But I feel pretty confident that you know, I'm going to be consistent here and I'm going to tell you all, yeah, no, this was a pretty good show. And because I feel like I enjoyed it. I feel like you enjoyed it. Did you? I don't know why I'm putting that assumption on you. You know, that's not fair. That's not fair at all. You know, it's like, you know, I'm inviting you over for dinner. I am assuming you're going to bring a bottle of wine, right? And if you don't, well, who's disappointed? Is it me? Yes, because I set myself up for disappointment. You know, if you come to, if I invite you to dinner and you know, and let's say you bring a bottle of wine, that'll be tremendous, right? If you don't, that's fine too. I'm not going to judge you, you know. But I mean, you know, I'm not imposing myself onto you and saying, you know, you should be bringing something to dinner. I think it's common courtesy to bring something, right? Some people bring dessert. Around here, a lot of people just bring a bottle of wine, and whether we open it while we're eating or not, you know, either we stash it away or, you know, we keep whatever, you know. But usually that's what a lot of people do. And you know, if all else fails, you know, you call your host, you contact your host, you text your host, and you ask them, you say, should I bring anything? And the host will always say no, right? Because that's what a good host does. A good host will never say, yeah, you know what? Maybe you should bring an entree. And you're like if you do that, not, you know, an appetizer, not an entree. It's not this, anyway, I get confused sometimes because an entree around here, look, it doesn't matter. You bring an appetizer. And then you're like, why would I bring an appetizer to this dinner that I've been invited to? Then you're like, what kind of rinky-dink operation is this guy running? What kind of dinner party am I being invited to if I have to bring the appetizer? What the fuck is this schmo doing? Is he asking another party to bring the main course? Another party to bring the soup? Is this someone else bringing soup? Bringing a bit, you know? I think it's okay to contact the host to say, can I bring anything? And then the host will say no, and you say, well, look, I'll bring a bottle of wine, or would you like me to bring dessert? And most of the time, you know, a host will be like, absolutely, oh, that'd be great. Oh, dessert, that's fine, you know, even if you have made dessert. Or they'll just try to say, don't bring dessert because I've been slaving over it, all day. Or, you know, Susan's been slaving over it all day or whatever the fuck. And I don't know why I'm talking about this anymore. why I'm talking about, you know, dinner party gift, dinner party gifts that you should bring, right? I knew this one lady who would bring like close to like a basket full of like you know one of these gift baskets with all sorts of cheese and cured meats, you know. They call it in French un cadeau d'hôtesse, which is a gift you sort of like that's customary to bring to the home specifically, like, and the recipient usually is the woman, because traditionally, right, they're doing all the work, they're doing all the cooking, and then you bring like a big basket of goods, you know. I don't know if that's a thing anywhere else. It's not that it's a thing here, it's a bit of an old-timey custom. And I know there was this one lady I knew who would bring these types of gifts to dinner parties, and you're just arriving with your, you know, your fucking Pinot Gris, and you're like, there you go. She arrives with a big fucking basket with a bow, and there's like crackers and two types of cheeses and three types of meats and baguettes, and you're like, okay, olives, whatever the fuck. Dynamite is also a show that happened, and I don't know. So, anyway, let's get to it. The Dynasty Go Home Show. The show opens with the new IWGP World Heavyweight Champion, Jon Moxley, popping out, coming through the crowd with the belt. Of course, for those of you who don't know, he defeated Tetsuya Naito this weekend in Chicago at New Japan Pro Wrestling's Windy City Riot show. So Moxley, as we mentioned, talking about it earlier this week on the Mr. Warren Hayes show, which you can check out, by the way. I also review Windy City Riot to a certain amount of detail, right? So you can go check that out. We talk about that a bit. John Moxley is the first man to be a world champion in WWE, in New Japan Pro Wrestling, and in AEW. So that's a big milestone. He's the first man to do it. Congratulations to John. You know, he gets on the mic, talks about winning his first title, like right here in Indianapolis, and, you know, how he's been told all his career what he can and cannot do, and look at where he is now. They can, you know, anyone who still thinks that he can't be successful can kiss his ass. And look, I mean, you know, I'm not going to get into the whole discourse regarding New Japan fans and how they feel about Moxley winning. Like I said, I covered it pretty extensively on the Mr. Warren Hayes Show in and about itself. But I think that as far as a Gaijin wrestler winning the title, being the top guy of New Japan, you could do a lot worse than John Moxley, who has a connection to New Japan that predates, even though it's just a little bit, but it does predate AEW. You know, this is a guy who wanted to wrestle, go off and do his thing, unshackled. He didn't want people telling him what to do, what he could or could not do. So he's like, okay, I'm going to take my destiny into my own hands. And has turned himself into something which I think at some point we're going to have to start calling iconic. I think John Moxley's post-WWE run has cemented him as an icon in professional wrestling. Particularly for this era that we're in right now, there's no one really that does it like him. A lot of people imitate, try to duplicate, but they just can't get it. Moxley has something extremely special. He knows how what his appeal is and is tremendous at it. So we'll see what kind of scenario develops with his scheduling and the minute he won, people were talking about, oh, he's going to lose it too, right? In perfect, you know, pro wrestling fan, in perfect pro wrestling fan fashion, a champion, a guy, a gal wins a belt. So immediately we start talking about how they're going to lose it. But you know, there is an interesting, but I will admit that in this situation, there is an interesting, it's interesting to think about how Moxley, what the end game is for Moxley, because it's such an unusual situation for New Japan to do this, especially taking off of Tetsuya Naito, who is, you know, they're the most popular wrestler in New Japan right now, and how all of this is going to coalesce into the schedule moving forward. And we're heading slowly but surely into G1 season as well. Some people are already talking about the Dome in January. So, you know, there's a lot of things to think about. You know, it's an interesting time. And Mox's promo here, if we're going back to the show instead of the greater concepts of everything, Mox's promo here, I thought was, earnest. I thought it was very good. I think it's, you know, maybe it petered off a little bit at the end, didn't have that high level energy maintained throughout, but he's a guy who speaks from the heart, who says what he has to say, says it as truthfully as you can get in a pro wrestling context. He talks about the Don Callis family as well, and challenges, you know, saying that he doesn't like the fact that they came after Danielson. Danielson is his friend, and so he challenges Powerhouse Hobbs to a match next week on Dynamite. So that will be interesting. So yeah, opening segment with Mox again. You know, you guys and gals and non-binary pals know how I feel about opening segments for wrestling shows. You know, unless it's really, really crucial. You know, And as far as this goes, you know, was it really crucial for us to hear from Moxley at the start of the show? Not really. I know it had implications later on in the evening with the main event match. But then again, it, you know, we could have had this segment happen just about any time. Then we get, I don't know if this, you know, and Mox's energy, I don't think was maintained throughout the promo. Like it wasn't, you know, it wasn't an all-timer, wasn't, you know, something to really start off the show with a tremendous bang. Like I thought it started off the show well, but maybe not as effective as we would have hoped. Perhaps when I say we, I mean AEW. Mercedes Moné is backstage. She's cutting a promo. Talking about who turned off the lights, who attacked her. It's Alex Marvez. He was right there. You know, it's Julie Hunt. No! It's Marvez. I don't know why no one is interrogating Alex Marvez at this point. He was right there, right next to her. He had a clean shot. Turn out the lights, and he just, boom! Just extends his arm. Whomp! Take that, Mercedes Moné. You get him the Marvez special. Maybe he's got a little combo going, you know, left, left, right, you know, jab, jab, uppercut. I don't know. Everything I know about boxing, I learned by playing Mike Tyson's Punch-Out. Anyway, back to the Moné thing. Look, I am a Mercedes Moné fan. I think those of you who've been here long enough know they are not doing her any favors with these talk segments. I know they brought in Pepperman to handle her writing and give her things to do week after week and have, you know, little creative segments. But AEW is doing her a tremendous disservice by holding on to her first match for Double or Nothing. And I understand, look, I understand that you want her first match to be a big deal. You want it to you know, you want people to pay for it. But at this point, I think the hype is being sucked out of the room because Mercedes is talking and talking and talking, and that has never been her strong suit. She's never come across good in them, and we're expecting her to drive home these segments like big time. No. This is not how it works for Mercedes Moné. I think the ball is being dropped right now. She should have been on television wrestling way before this. You don't have to make her wrestle every week. You can still make it feel special or whatever the fuck. But look at Will Ospreay. Will Ospreay is another guy they brought in with pomp and circumstance and he's been cutting tremendous promos, right? Probably some of the best of his career at this point. But on top of that, like he's been wrestling. He's wrestled multiple times on television, on top of pay-per-view. You know, Kazuchika Okada is another guy that they brought in, pomp and circumstance. What are they doing with him? They're having him wrestle too. Tags, trios, singles. Again, not every week, but not once a month either. Now, Moné, she came in. In March, March was the big business show, right? Came in March, right? And this is all she's been doing. Standing around talking. Getting involved in stuff. I think they're doing her a tremendous disservice. Tremendous disservice. She's a great in-ring performer. She's a very good pro wrestler. but this is doing her no favors. And I don't think this is generating buys for Double or Nothing. Unless they've got some tremendous magic trick. They've got this secret combination that they're going to pull on us after Dynasty that will suddenly skyrocket the Willow Nightingale Mercedes Moné feud to the stratosphere. She's sucking the air out of the room herself. Like, there's, you know, and if I'm the booker, if I'm Tony Khan, I'm sitting down with her and I'm like, look, I got to get you. I have to put you in the ring. We got to give you. If not to get people excited for it, just to get a fucking tune-up match. She hasn't wrestled in months. Again, not saying she's terrible, far from it. But what I am saying is she could probably, you know, she could probably get some ring time, wash off some of the kinks, and get going proper. I don't know. Finally, we get to the first match. Adam Copeland actually makes his entrance. He's supposed to tag team with Willow Nightingale against Brody King and Julia Hart in a mixed tag match, but someone has attacked Willow Nightingale backstage. You've got people around her, Chris Statlander, Stokely, so on and so forth. They're checking on her to make sure if she can make it or not. But in the meantime, the lights go down in the arena. They come back up. Brody King is there, along with Julia Hart. Brody attacks Copeland from behind. Just like starts demolishing Copeland. Gets him back in the ring. And the match starts. Where this was all right, nothing spectacular, but it was an angle more than anything else. Since Willow was hurt backstage, most of this match was Copeland and Brody, with Julia Hart, you know, pulling some interference, doing some managerial style interference. Oh, a little choke here, a little, you know, a little trip here. You know the stuff. Because otherwise, Brody King is beating down Copeland, who lands an impaler DDT. Willow eventually does come down. You could see this coming. You've watched pro wrestling before. Unless this was your very first pro wrestling match, you're like, oh my God, Willow Nightingale. She made her way back. She is she is tremendously strong. What a resilient woman coming to help her. That's what you're saying if this is the very first pro wrestling match you've ever seen. Otherwise, you're like, yeah, she's coming back. And she does come back. She's taped up, hits a crossbody on Brody King. Julia Hart dodges her. Like, she's getting the hell out of there. Spear by Copeland on King, and a corner cannonball by Nightingale. So she's getting offense in on Big Brody. But while the ref is distracted, Julia Hart uses a chain to punch Willow Nightingale right in the kisser, locks in the Heartless, gets the win. And after the match, Julia Hart keeps the hold on until Mercedes Moné comes to the ring with a steel chair and runs off the House of Black. And, you know, she may or may not have wanted to attack Willow Nightingale, but Adam Copeland came in and sort of defused the situation. He was going, hey, everyone, let's calm down, kind of thing. And she shakes Copeland's hand, and everything's good. Obviously, this match was to protect Julia Hart, who was injured recently in a match against Layla Hirsch. And while everything seems to be indicating that she will be taking part in her match this Saturday, they were not risking anything. Was she cleared for this? I don't know. Like, she didn't do much. You know, was she cleared for this match? Cleared enough to lock in the Heartless, you know, but she didn't bump. She didn't get any offense in. This is probably why they did the angle with Willow to sort of keep Copeland and Brody in a one-on-one situation where Julia Hart wouldn't have to really do anything overtly physical. So if you're asking me, her status is still a little bit up in the air for Dynasty this weekend. Maybe not horribly, up in the air. She looks okay. She seems fine. But, hey, don't be surprised if maybe Willow gets a bit of a squash here. Maybe. Anyway, fine, Matt. Nothing out of the ordinary. I gave it a 3. Good little match. That was fine. Advanced an angle. That's all fine. Renee Paquette is chatting with the AEW World Champion Samoa Joe. He says that Swerve Strickland can't carry himself like a champion, and he had to disinfect the AEW World title because you know where Nana's been. But he says Swerve can't win the big one. Essentially calls him a choke artist, and he will be choking Strickland out come Dynasty. Then we have the Young Bucks and Kazuchika Okada. The Young Bucks interrupt an FTR video package where they were calling shots and apologize for preempting it, basically telling FTR, hey, sorry guys, sorry for your segment. We're going long. We'll put it on social media. I thought that was funny. I really thought that was a funny segment there. And Okada basically, Okada calls Pac. He says, hey, Pac. And that was tremendous. I popped so hard. Hey, Pac. Oh my god. I thought that was tremendous. And he calls him a dead man. Kazuchika Okada, brother. Cutting promos in English like it's his first language. No, it's not. But it's tremendous nonetheless. So that leads us to the match where you have the Elite, made up of the Young Bucks and Kazuchika Okada, taking on the trio and defeating the trio of Pac, Penta El Zero Miedo, and Daniel Garcia. When's the last time that Death Triangle, all three members of Death Triangle, have been healthy all at once? When is the last time this happened? I don't know when. I can't remember. We got a fine little trios match here. I thought there was some great work by the Elite in this match. Okada continues to be terribly comfortable in his new role. I think he's revitalized. I think he's feeling it. He's enjoying what he's doing. I think, a lot of people want to make all sorts of theories and conspiracies about why he left New Japan. And I think there's basically two reasons. The money. And the fact that ostensibly he was done with New Japan. There was nothing left for him to do, and they weren't coming up with anything to scratch his itch either. Maybe he was egging on for a heel turn in New Japan and Gedo was shutting it down. I don't know. But this heel turn in AEW has been tremendous. It's been doing so good and so much good for him as well. Garcia cleans house when he gets a tag, and until Nick Jackson clocks him with a kick off the apron. Matt Jackson wrestles with a microphone for a little bit, particularly during picture-in-picture. Pac throws Germans around, lands a Norihara moonsault. Okada lands the package neck breaker made in Japan by Penta. They all get their shit in, and Pac is there in the ring standing tall. Finally, he gets his hands on Okada. They strike off at each other. Pack goes up top, probably for Black Arrow, but gets tossed off the top rope by Nick, and Pack takes a nasty bump where I look at that as, oh God, please tell me he's not injured again, but he looked fine. Just lands on his face. I don't know, like it's... Okada lands some tombstones and after a triple team from the Elite, basically a super kick party and a rainmaker on Dan Garcia, they get the win. After the match, the EVPs land the EVP trigger on Dan Garcia, and then the Bucks bring a ladder into the ring. They slam Garcia onto it. They sandwich him in the ladder, yeah, and so on and so forth. This goes on until Pac runs in with the timekeeper's hammer to clobber those dudes. There's a throwback right there. Remember that? The original Trios feud? That was fun. I like that little throwback there. That was fun. Good little match. Set up some heat for the pay-per-view this weekend. It's fine. I've seen more exciting... there's been more exciting... six-man tags like this in AEW than this, but you know, it did what it had to do. It wasn't awful. It happened. It was fine. And push the angles forward for Dynasty. Yeah, so there you go. Then we get the Taz mediation segment. I don't know if between Chris Jericho and Hook. Taz is there. Chris Jericho then comes in, and then after Hook, Hook is pissed, and Jericho before Hook comes out, puts over Taz, says, "I've known you for 30 years. Thank you for putting this together. You're a good lad," basically. And, he tries to explain his actions from last week when he pulled Hook off the apron and saying, "It's because you weren't listening to me." And I like this, this sleazeball kind of self-righteous Chris Jericho was like, "I was only trying to look out for you," kind of thing, like gaslighting sleazeball, and I'm like, Chris, babyface Chris Jericho stinks. He there's no two ways about it. It gets stale so fast. Now here, like, cut the Lionheart bullshit. Do the Judas thing. Get people singing along. But this stuff is much more compelling when it comes to Chris Jericho. He even mentions, he doesn't use the word itself, but, he mentions all the people who have wrestled him, with whom he's had programs with, and how better off all of them are. He rattles off the names. And it just so happens I made a video about the Jericho Vortex a few months ago. I had the pleasure of having Joe Lanza of the Voices of Wrestling, the flagship on the flagship podcast on that very show, where we basically broke down every feud that Chris Jericho had been in and talked about whether that person was in a better place or not after the feud. So you can check that out as well. It's a good watch, and it suddenly seems very timely at the same time. So I find it interesting that he mentioned that. Jericho says tells Hook, "Do you want to sit under the learning tree of Chris Jericho?" And Hook says no. Taz is, Chris Jericho gets, incensed. Taz tells him to back off, but Jericho shoves Taz down. Taz was not wrestled in such a long... I would have popped if he had just picked him up and suplexed him. But I think whatever knee issues that Taz has at this point, I think there's no coming back from that. I don't think he can do that anymore. Hook doesn't take very kindly to that and tells Chris Jericho he's crossed the line anytime, anywhere kind of thing. Basically challenging him. This was a weird segment because there was weird. It's weird because I think it started off fine. But you know, Hook as a tough guy, you know, I know what they're trying to do with him, and I don't think it's in his, it's his DNA so far to be like the smart mouth talk, yeah, the smart mouth tough guy, you know, who'll always have like the cutting retort, you know, just like, I'm going to beat your ass. You know, like kind of like what Taz used to be. He's not like his dad when it comes to this kind of stuff. He's, you know, he's still, he's improving tremendously. He's still inexperienced. I think we can stop calling him green. I think he's still inexperienced though. But his character work is, you know, laughably bad. And Jericho, look, I know, you know, your mileage on Jericho will vary depending on a bunch of stuff, but I don't hate this. I don't hate this as much as other people do. I think this is a smart pivot for Jericho, who then is going to, they set up a match. I think it's for 0 Hour for Chris Jericho and Hook. Isn't it for 0 Hour, or am I confused? Or are they putting them on the main card? I don't remember. I know there's another match for 0 Hour. I just don't remember. You can sue me. I just don't remember. And I understand, like, you know, I as good as he is as a skis ball, I don't think this was a tip top segment. I think it kind of fumbled, and it was at the 9 o'clock hour. You know, it was at at the top of the hour at 9. So, you know, I don't think this was a successful, I don't think this was a successful angle, but hey, we'll move on to this, to this match this weekend, and then maybe we'll be done with it. We probably won't. Renee Paquette, now is backstage having a sit down interview with Shane Strickland, not unlike what she did with Samoa Joe earlier. She says, Strickland says that he's going to be taking the title from Joe, on Sunday. And, he says, with all due respect to you, Renee, I shouldn't be sitting here explaining how I'm going to defeat Samoa Joe. I'm going to tell it to Joe's face tonight. So they're setting up a confrontation, a one last confrontation for later tonight. This leads us to Deonna Purrazzo defeating Mariah May. A lot of people, I don't know, maybe I wasn't in a good mood. I don't know. A lot of people really, really did not like this match. I'm not saying like this is the greatest TV match I've seen in months or whatever, but I didn't hate it that much. And I didn't think it was as bad as some people are making it out to be. Maybe I'm alone on this little island. Like, sure, it was a little sloppy, but you know what? There's sloppiness that oftentimes leads into good stuff. You know, there's a certain level of sloppiness in pro wrestling that does work, you know, if you're able to make it work. But yet, you know, the match had flaws, you know, especially the finish, which first, I don't know how the finish came together. It was a bad finish. We'll just leave it at that. I thought it was weird. But I liked it, but nothing more than that. And I don't want to give the impression that I'm defending it and I'm like, oh, these people are insane. They shouldn't. No, I get why people didn't like it all that much. I just find it, I'm on a little bit of an island. You know, I might be closer to 3 stars on this match than a lot of people were like, it's a 2, it's a 1.5, it stunk. I don't know. I've seen much worse matches than these. You know, in from the women's division in AEW as well. You know, I would agree that this is probably Mariah May's least competent match that she's done since joining AEW. I don't know what to tell you. It wasn't good. It wasn't good, but, you know, it was not that terrible either. I don't know. You know, I'm ambivalent. I'm just mostly surprised at how much I, hey, this is pretty good. And then I'm like, no, it's not. Okay. Weird. It happens. What do you want from me? After the match, Timeless Toni Storm and Mariah May beat down Perrazzo until Thunder Rosa arrives to make the save. Mariah May and Deonna break off, and Thunder Rosa puts Toni into a camel clutch type gimmick where she puts makeup on her face, sort of as a retort to Toni wiping the makeup, the face paint, I should say, off of Thunder Rosa last week, and she's putting lipstick all over. And I'm like, well, you know, Toni does that often, right? She doesn't she do that? Like, it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. And then after the match, you know, Deonna and Thunder Rosa get into each other's faces again, and they start shoving each other. It's starting to get physical, their affair. So continuing that story as well as setting up the match for this weekend, of course, Toni Storm versus Thunder Rosa. Renee Paquette is backstage once again. She's with Bullet Club Gold, and they anyway, look, there, yeah, Jay White again, yeah, just delivers a perfect masterclass of a promo on just how to maximize the time that you have to say everything you want to say with personality, with charisma, with gumption, putting everyone over. Putting the guns over. It's incredible how the guns have become cooler because of Jay White, right? I can't be the only one who thinks that. They challenged the Acclaimed to unify the trio's titles, right? Is it a unification? I know that it's a winner-takes-all type of situation. Maybe I'm jumping the gun talking about unification. Did they talk about unification? Yeah, it's a winner take all. I jumped the gun on the unification thing. It's a winner take all match that's officially announced. So that does not imply unification. So essentially that's what we're doing here. And then once we get back from commercial, the Acclaimed are there, and they accept the challenge and cut promos, and I cannot wait to not see the Acclaimed on my TV for a long, long time. It hasn't been for me for a while. You know, I don't want to reiterate every time. I feel like I have to justify myself every time I talk about the Acclaimed and how it's not for me. But, you know, they certainly were over. They were very, very popular. Now it's just, you know, give it a rest for a while. Anyway, Orange Cassidy defeated Shane Taylor. Good little match. Draping Stunner by Shane Taylor here, who ends up manhandling Orange Cassidy. Cassidy lands a super kick, but eats a kick as well. Satellite DDT is blocked by Shane Taylor, but a Stun Dog Millionaire lands. Cassidy fires up. He dives on Lee Moriarty and Anthony Ogogo, of course, of Shane Taylor Productions, because they were getting involved in the match. The beach break was blocked. Orange Cassidy eats a knee, but the orange punch does the job. He wins. Of course, Orange Cassidy has no more friends. His best friends are all gone. They have been dismissed. So we, you know, he had to fight all of this alone, and he won. You know, it's interesting that it's interesting to me right now that Shane Taylor is having a bit of a career resurgence. That he's been, you know, he wasn't part of the original Ring of Honor purchase plans and so on and so forth. And I think it's interesting that now he's having a career resurgence. He's, you know, not tearing, you know, he's not on winning streaks or whatever, you know, but he's a, you know, a good high level guy that can do enhancement matches and put the stars over. He has his own little group, that could eventually develop into something. You know, he's basically in a spot that really works out well, and that was also needed in AEW, and I think he fills it well. And I'm glad to see him there. And it's interesting how, you know, in the minds of a lot of people, he was the Marty Jannetty of the Pretty Boy Killers. And now he's probably better positioned than the Shawn Michaels of the duo. The guy that everyone saw the future and the potential in. One guy was plagued by health issues. I understand, you know, and maybe there was some ego issues. I don't know. I don't know. How many times I don't want to speculate too much because I don't know, but I still think it's interesting. It's very interesting that Shane Taylor is in this position right now. After the match, Shane Taylor Productions go back after Orange Cassidy. Anthony Ogogo nails him with a kidney punch. Christopher Daniels and Matt Sydal run down to save Cassidy, but Trent Beretta comes out of nowhere and attacks them, takes them down with a chair, swings it around. And Beretta sort of gives the nod to Shane Taylor Productions, like, yeah, fuck this boy up kind of thing. And they do. Border Street City Stretch by Lee Moriarty ends this visual. I mean, yeah, absolutely fine stuff. Good angle continuing here. We get a video package for Roderick Strong versus Kyle O'Reilly. And that leads us to the main event match anyway. Will Ospreay defeated Claudio Castagnoli in a tremendous TV match. A great television match with Will Ospreay looking like Will Ospreay and Claudio like a killer. You know, Ospreay knew what he had to do here. Make, you know, Claudio wrestles like a beast. Okay, you're going to do it. We're going to do it. Going to wrestle like a beast. Claudio interrupts a head scissors with a backbreaker straight off the bat, which was tremendous. He beats Will up on the floor and Claudio gets a heat segment. Deja vu by Will Ospreay and a pescado by Claudio Castagnoli. And a pescado by Will, but Claudio Castagnoli catches him out of midair. Just tremendous stuff. You know, Will doesn't weigh 150 pounds anymore. Like, Jesus Christ. Explosive offense by Will Ospreay follows, lands a phenomenal forearm, sharpshooter as well, gets locked in, but Castagnoli reverses it into a clover leaf and then transitions into a crossface. Just tremendous stuff. Tiger driver by Will Ospreay, dynamic exchange between the two that ends with Will Ospreay avoiding the Ricola bomb with a roll-up. Spanish fly by Will Ospreay, pop-up uppercut by Castagnoli, who then sets Will up for the big swing, and Will somehow counters out of it. Just fantastic stuff. He gets the hidden blade for the win. Just a tremendous, physical, high-octane, high-energy match, slugging it out, moves. It had everything. It had everything you could want out of a professional wrestling match. Just tremendous stuff. I gave it 4.25 stars. That's how much I like this fucking match. And again, it's still surreal to think that we have Will Ospreay on TV, you know, practically every week doing awesome shit for our enjoyment for free on TV. It's tremendous stuff. Good match. And, you know, the thing is that Ospreay's so good. He knows what the deal is. He knows how Claudio's supposed to come across. So he works to Claudio, right? He works to making Claudio look as good as he can. This is the magic of Will Ospreay. This is why Will Ospreay is going to go down as one of the greatest to ever do it. for stuff like this. It's, he's absolutely tremendous. After the match, anyway, the Callis family get to the ring. They beat down Claudio until Moxley makes the save. Of course, he stares Hobbs down. In the meantime, Will Ospreay doesn't seem very enchanted by the actions of the Don Callis family. So we're starting to get a little rift here. Good stuff. We're setting up the match for next week with Hobbs. You know, Mox, I forgot to say this. Mox, when he won the title, the New Japan World Championship, World Heavyweight Championship, he said that he specifically wanted to defend that title against the young guys, right? He wanted to defend the title against against the new generation. And look at him here, coming in, working with one of AEW's younger stars in Will Hobbs. Will this be a transition maybe for Moxley moving forward? I don't know. And then we get the main event segment where Strickland comes out to deliver his message to the champ. Talked about how he knocked him on his ass last week and how Samoa Joe had the fear of God in his eyes when Strickland raised the AEW title way above his head. Joe runs down. There's security everywhere. And Strickland does the top rope stomp, double stomp, onto all the guys. And it is one of the most spectacularly absurd visuals. Like, I you can't hate it. I can't sit here and say, oh, it stunk, it looked awful. No, it was just a tremendously ridiculous visual. The way he came out and just spread his legs across to be able to land on as many dudes as possible. Amazing stuff. They get in the ring, they fight a bit, but Joe gets the upper hand and lands the muscle buster. Maybe indicating, you know, champ stands tall before the pay-per-view. That's usually not a good sign. You know, I got, I'm looking forward to this match. And, you know, again, on the Mr. Warren Hayes Show podcast this week, again, I swear, I promise you should watch it. I previewed Dynasty at the end of the show, and you know, my question with Swerve, you know, there's really two ways to go about Swerve winning this weekend or lose, you know. There's two ways. He either wins or loses. Of course, Warren, Jesus. You know, this isn't rocket science here. But I think you could go both ways, and both are viable. One will just require a little more extra effort and showing that there is a plan behind this. Instead of, you know, because if Swerve is to lose, you have to show that you have a plan. That this just isn't haphazard, fly by the seat of your pants booking here. You know, I still think the better story would have been Swerve finally winning the title off of Hangman Page. And I still think Hangman could show up this weekend and play a part in costing the title for Swerve and then, you know, reigniting this bullshit. And, you know, there's something very compelling about Swerve and his chase, which is good, but there will have to be concerted efforts to show that there is a plan and we're not just flying by the seat of our pants here. Whereas if, you know, if he wins, I think there's no real downside to it. I don't think there's a real downside to it. And, you know, strap him up, build a new guy, build a new top star, and let's see what happens. And I think there's a lot of value in that. As many of you know, I've been a Swerve Strickland guy for a long time, long time, saying that he has world championship material. I've been lobbying for this. And on top of the fact that, you know, I'm a proponent of, if you've got the match, do it. Don't drag it out. Don't wait till someone gets hurt or something happens or someone leaves the company or any kind of bullshit. Give us the match while you have it, kind of thing. Make the moment happen when you have it. Put Swerve in the driver's seat. Make him world champion. And especially in the context of AEW recently, where, you know, the WrestleMania, the post-WrestleMania vibe has been very good. You know, the PR has been very positive. You know, even Vince's stuff is there, you know, is having good vibes about it now. They're publishing articles on MSNBC about Vince and how he's bringing kittens and puppies to be adopted by his friends, whatever the fuck. You know, like, the vibe is very good. WWE is very much the babyface right now. You know, and with AEW sort of being on the brunt of it, and the airing of the footage, which a lot of people got exhausted about, it would be a very good way for AEW to sort of rise above, pull their heads up out of from beneath the water and take a nice deep breath and like, okay, this is good. And they will dominate the cycle with some very, very positive, very good news. It'll be very difficult to put a negative spin on Swerve Strickland winning the title. It's going to be news that will reverberate very positively throughout wrestling. So there's a lot of good reasons to, and Swerve rules, like, on top of it all, despite whatever company concerns are one thing, on top of that, you know, I like Swerve. I think Swerve rules, and it's a situation where it's like, put your money where your mouth is. You want to be the champ? Let's go. Let's do it. Let's see what's going to happen, right? I'm all for it. I'm 100% for it. But I can see both scenarios happening as well. We'll just see what happens this weekend. That was AEW Dynamite for the April 17, 2024. So, turns out I was right. I liked this more than... I liked it more than I hated it. My gut instincts were correct. Thankfully, I was able to get a good read on myself, and I didn't end up hating the show as I was doing the review. We're all good. Everything is fine. Everything is A-okay. And I hope you guys and gals and non-binary pals are A-okay as well. And thank you for hanging out till the very end of this review. If you like this, a like and a subscription on youtube.com/MrWarrenHayes or a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, 5-star rating on Spotify would be tremendous. I will be back probably on Tuesday with another edition of the Mr. Warren Hayes Show. We will be reviewing AEW Dynasty in depth, as well as talking about whatever's going on elsewhere as well. But in the meantime, folks, I hope you have a great rest of your week, a great weekend, and I'll see you next time.